No sane person can continue to exist as such under conditions of the absolute reality of a haunted house on the hill. The house itself, not sane, stands there still, holding its dark secrets within its walls. A sensible house, by the most skewed of means, it is silent until it isn't, friendly before the kindness runs out, and welcoming to a fault. No wonder Eleanor felt called to it, just as we did. We will be discussing The Haunting of Hill House, the novel, not the show. There are mentions of death and possible suicide, domestic and financial abuse, and some sensitive discussion about mood swings and unstable emotional states. Be cautious, and I hope you enjoy your stay.
So I've got a story for you before we get started because it's very funny.
Ooh, okay.
So, okay, I just went to BJ's, which is, you know, like Costco, and I took my granny cart, and I apparently cut myself on something as I was going, I guess something on the cart. I don't know what else I touched that would have cut me, but I didn't notice at first, and then I get to like a stoplight, and there's someone else walking, and she like gestures at my hand. Mm-hmm. She says, "You're bleeding," and I look down, and my hand is just like covered in blood.
Oh my god!
And it's not that big a cut; it must have just hit right on a vein or something. And so I go in. There was like a Popeyes on the corner, and I go into the Popeyes, and I'm like, they don't have napkins out because I don't know why. Of course, they don't have napkins out when I really need one. And I go to the counter, ask the woman, like, "Can I have a napkin, please?" And she says, "You know, napkins are for customers." And I just hold up my bloody hand and she just takes like a stack of napkins and like shoves it at me. Like she
Amazing.
Could not. Yeah. So it was just like, I don't know. It just felt like very like secret society. Like, oh, I can't have a napkin. Look at my hand. I've got the
mark. I will
mark.
Bleed all over you.
Yes, I will bleed on you. Anyway, so that's my bloody napkin Popeye story. And with that, we will get started.
Yes, let's get started after that horror show into this horror show.
Yeah, welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about our favorite queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we are going to be discussing the 1959 novel by Shirley Jackson, The Haunting of Hill House, not the Netflix show. We're talking about the novel.
The novel.
Yes.
The book.
Books are a thing that still exist.
The literary masterpiece, that's my favorite.
It's your favorite? Oh no, I'm going to feel bad because I'm going to say negative things about
no,
it.
No, I know a lot of people don't like it.
I mean,
I'm fine with that.
I didn't dislike it. Like, it's not the easiest book to read because it's a lot of people. I know it was written in the 1950s, but I guess it's supposed to be like the 1920s, I assume. Maybe 1930s. I don't know. Like, it's definitely supposed to be kind of earlier, I feel like, because there's like no telephone or anything. Like, it seems like society's a little more disconnected than it was in the 1950s. And it's just a bunch of very like high society types having conversations about.
Really? You know, that's what you felt it was?
Okay. It was so much of that. Like, Dr. Montague is talking about his book that he is reading, and it's not easy to read. And then Luke, the young kind of foppy guy who's the heir, is just like, everything's like a joke to him. And he's it's very like high society people reacting to horror.
To me, it felt more like four stoners in a locked room.
I mean, they're definitely drunkards, like not drunkards, they're alcohol, like, sorry, I'm using like the verbiage of the time. They're alcoholics.
Yeah.
Like their response to every single thing that goes wrong is like, better go have a drink.
True.
Yeah. Or like, I'm cold. I'm going to have some brandy.
Yeah. To warm yourself up.
Yeah.
Do you want to do a summary or?
Yeah. Do you want, I don't know. So basically, really, the main character is Eleanor, who is invited by Dr. Montague, an investigator of the supernatural, to come stay at a haunted house, a house that he assumes or believes to be haunted called Hill House. It's a mansion in the hinterlands, non-specific hinterlands, and they're supposed to stay there that summer. Dr. Montague, Eleanor, who's kind of like a shy introvert who's spent the last decade caring for her disabled mother. Then there's also Theodora, who is like an urban artiste socialite. And then there's Luke, who's the heir to the house, Hill House. And he's kind of like, yeah, he's a gambler. He's kind of a cad.
He's a great boy.
I like him. I like Luke the best just because like everything was kind of a joke to it. Like he made everything into a joke. They all show up at the house. Eleanor gets there first. The people who are taking care of it, the couple whose name I forget.
Dudleys.
The Dudleys are weird and robotic. I wasn't sure. Like I think part of the book is that like you're never quite sure if it's actually like something supernatural or not. Mm-hmm. But definitely Mrs. Dudley is like,
I love her. She's great.
She doesn't like say anything except like the same line over and over again. And like, I leave at 6 or whatever, you know, like I put the stuff out at 6. It's just like, they're weird and off-putting, but everyone shows up at the house. They all get to know each other. Eleanor and Theodora really hit it off. They're the couple we're probably going to be talking about for the most part. They encounter some strange things start happening at night. It's like a lot of like pounding on doors and walls, strange writing on the walls that seems to be talking to Eleanor. At some point, two characters say they see a wolf. There's a part where Eleanor sees like a supernatural picnic going on. And so there's all this weird supernatural stuff that's possibly happening. Eleanor kind of starts, I don't know, it's either, you know, she's losing her sanity or she is succumbing to the supernatural spirits of the house. It's ambiguous as to which one. Which I think culminates when Theodora kind of rejects Eleanor because Eleanor's like, I'm going to, you know, after this, I'll come home with you. And Theodora is just like,
I don't take home stray cats.
Yeah, I don't take home stray cats, which is like
so sad. That was such a
ice
line.
Ice cold. Wow. Yeah, that line was just, wow. What a burn. So I think Eleanor kind of loses control. The other characters are worried about her safety, and they decide that she has to leave. She gets in her car and then drives into a tree and dies. Mm-hmm. That's what's implied, at least. So one thing about this book, a lot of stuff is happening by implication.
Yes.
So there's a lot of different ways to interpret different scenes. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So like Theodora is implied to be gay.
Yeah, she's like an artist who lives with a partner.
Yeah.
And they got into an argument, so she decides to take the summer away from them.
Yeah.
And her partner's name, her partner's gender or pronouns are never used.
Yep.
So there's a lot of implication there.
There's also the former owner of Hill House, who is like an older woman who takes a younger
with her
woman,
companion.
Yeah, her companion, and leaves the Hill House to the companion, and everyone like says, "Oh, the companion was off gallivanting with young men while the old woman died and whatnot." And really, it's just like, no, they were a couple. Like that's, you know,
Harold. Like, they're lesbians.
Yeah, yeah. This is very like they were roommates energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so one reading I had, like, something I thought, I feel like I've monopolized this conversation a lot far, by the way.
No, this is interesting. Go ahead.
One theory, idea, crazy conspiracy that I had was, like, maybe, like, of the four main characters, all of them are gay.
Could be.
There's different lines at different times. So there's that line that Dr. Montague says that I sent to you where, yeah. Okay, I need to read this. Verbatim, I have a beard, Dr. Montague said, pleased, and looked around at them with a happy beam. My wife, he told them, And then he goes on to say something about his wife, but just the way that it's written, I mean, I don't know that Shirley Jackson could be. I did look it up. The phrase beard does go back to like the mid-century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that she knew it. So maybe that was like a little wink and a nod. And his wife does show up, and she is the worst person in the world.
She's a character. She's like Umbridge from Harry Potter.
Yeah,
I would say.
Just think like, yeah, just Umbridge and just like,
but less cruel. Just very obnoxious and loud and takes up a lot of space and implied that she's cheating
with Arthur
on Dr. Montague.
Yeah.
Maybe if not physically, then definitely emotionally, I would say. Even though she does still seem to love her husband.
Yeah, but they sleep in different rooms. It's not just different beds. It's different rooms, which...
Yeah, but Montague seems completely fine with it.
Yeah. Well, again, like, in my theory, he is gay. And he's just like, I'm married to my beard, but he doesn't really... Because, like... Every interaction he has with his wife, it's so just like, it's clear that he wants really like as little to do with her as possible on some level.
And vice versa, really.
Yeah, like they clear, and like he does defend her at certain points. Like he's like, oh yeah, you know, aside from her like obsession with the supernatural, she's like fine. But like, it's not a very like forceful defense, and it's I don't know, like when he says it, I didn't think it that sincere.
Yeah, they definitely felt like roommates.
Yeah, so that's Dr. Montague. Eleanor clearly has a crush on Theodora. Like, that's very clearly Theodora is the one who's most clearly gay. And then Luke, I don't know, he's just kind of this young,
he's just vibing.
He's got like big bisexual energy. That's what he does. I would say. He's like very like, I'm a, you know, modern fop, and I'm just here to gamble and drink and have a good time.
Yes, he's very much, out of all three of them, the most normal person. So the premise is Dr. Montague invited a bunch of like people who had encounters with the supernatural in their life. And only Eleanor and Theodora answered. There was a random third person who didn't show up because the owner of Hill House said that Dr. Montague had to take her nephew with him because she wanted to get rid of Luke for the summer because he's a gambler and he takes money from her.
Yeah.
So he's pretty much the only one there for a reason that has nothing to do with the actual supernatural element.
That's a good point. Yeah. Eleanor and Theodora are there because they had like supernatural backgrounds.
Yeah. Theodora is like a super empath. And Eleanor, that's the thing with Eleanor. You mentioned it earlier that it's ambiguous on whether or not these things are happening because of Eleanor or because of the house or if they're even happening.
Yeah.
I'm of the strong opinion that it's most likely Eleanor's influence. Because I think, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that every time something supernatural happens, it's happening directly after she had some sort of strong emotional reaction to a thing.
Interesting. So in this theory, the house is not what's haunted, it's Eleanor that's haunted.
Well, it doesn't necessarily cancel out the hauntedness of this house, as it does amplify Eleanor's role in the whole thing. I think she might not be aware of it, but I think she has a bigger effect on places than she would imagine. Because she's there because when she was a child and her father died, stones rained on their house for several days, right?
Right.
And that happened after her father's death.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
Several times when things are happening throughout the story, like the banging on the doors and whatever, happen after fairly emotional conversations she has with characters, mostly with Theodora, but also just overall with characters.
That's so interesting. I didn't even think about that.
I read the story in my Columbia program. I read it for a horror class where we read a lot of horror stories. So I had to do a presentation on this one specifically. My presentation partner was this really cool guy. He was also gay.
Yeah.
Shout out to Patrick. He was very excited about it. I've never read it before. He was like, no, you gotta do this with me. We signed up for it. And when we were presenting, I'm not even kidding, this is not an exaggeration, but all the queer people in the class were like, oh, this book is gay as heck.
Yeah.
And then all the straight people were like, what are you talking about? And it was the most confusing moment of my life because it is so insanely clear on the page.
Yes.
They literally, Theodora and Eleanor, walk out of the house after arguing with each other, jealously arguing, and they're quietly walking across the lawn into the forest, their hands kind of brushing against each other, not willing to take each other's hand, and not willing to say, I love you. Canonically, on the page,
yeah,
it says they could not utter that phrase, I love you, because it would have made things too real. Not really platonic here, right?
No.
There is an argument to be made that this story is also about sisterhood and family. And Montague and the three people he invited could represent a family unit with a father and siblings, right? There's a lot of conflict between sisters in this story.
Yeah.
But there's also very, very clearly a lot of conflict between characters who are in same-sex relationship and the society that surrounds them. We see that with the original owner of the house. So the house belonged to a family with the surname of Crane, I believe. Yep. The father built this house for his wife and his two children. But as soon as the house was built, his wife died driving up to it. The carriage crashed before she could ever get to the house, right? Which, incidentally, is how Eleanor dies in the end.
Yeah.
But these two sisters, right, they had a very contentious relationship. We see the same thing with Eleanor and her sister. We also see one of the Crane sisters with her companion. So the companion was really, really criticized by the town.
Yeah.
Right? She was said to have killed the sister or ignored her and let her die. And that kind of also ties into Eleanor and her mother, because she most likely ignored her mother in the night and let her die.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely implied that Eleanor has a lot of guilt over her mother's death. Mm-hmm. And that maybe her mom was not an easy person to care for. And maybe Eleanor just let her die.
Yeah, it's very heavily implied.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of these sort of relationships. And you can read the book however you want.
Yep.
And that is the correct way, most likely. Like, Shirley Jackson is a really good writer. She gave us a lot of different ways to read this book. And it's amazing. But it's also so gay.
It really, there's so many moments, like I was highlighting moments where I was like, man, this is gay. But like, there's so many of them. There's so many moments, mm-hmm. like when Eleanor and Theodora move into the same room.
Yeah.
And then Theodora is wearing Eleanor's clothes because Theodora end up covered in blood. And then, supernatural blood, I guess, that then disappears. But anyways, and then they like sleep and they're like holding hands in bed. And
yes.
I don't know, there's all this.
There's a lot of jealousy from Theodora's end.
Yeah.
When it comes to Eleanor spending time with Luke.
Yes. Yeah. Theodora gets very protective of Eleanor.
She calls her a fool for falling for Luke's charms, which as readers, we know is not the case.
Yeah. And then Eleanor keeps repeating something when she talks to Theodora, like,
Journeys end in lovers' meeting.
Yes.
It's a Shakespeare thing. It's from, what play is it from? I think it's from the play with, that She's the Man is based on.
Twelfth Night.
Yes?
Yes.
Is it from Twelfth Night?
It's from Twelfth Night.
Okay, then you're right. I'm thinking of a different thing.
She's
regardless.
She's the man is what 12 is what?
Is it 12. I think it's
or is it
well that ends well or something.
No.
Regardless, this is
I'm looking this up real quick. She's the man inspired by William Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night.
Huh.
I know okay. Twelfth Night well because in my high school Shakespeare class, I don't know why, we spent a ton of time on Twelfth Night in particular. I mean, it's really good. Who doesn't like Orsino and Viola and Sebastian? Who's the goofy guy? Sir Toby. Anyway, Haunting of Hill House.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, sorry. Twelfth Night or What You Will. So I know it is What You Will.
Okay.
That's why I was confused. But yeah, so it's like a line that she keeps repeating.
Yes.
And she repeats it throughout her journey to get to the to Hill House, right? But then the first time it actually comes into play is she says, journeys end in lovers meeting and Theodora arrives.
Yeah.
It's so obvious. And then the same thing happens when Luke comes. Eleanor is, like, split between these two people. She's a very dependent person.
Yeah.
And she wants to be in love with Luke, I think.
Yeah.
But the second she meets him, she's like, I actually hate this guy.
Yeah, she's not a fan of Luke.
And this guy definitely hates her.
He doesn't hate her, but he,
like, ignores her.
Yeah, well, I think they're from, like, very different social classes, like... Luke's the young, rakish heir to Hill House, and Eleanor's from a very, I mean, it seems like a very, not very privileged background. And, like, it's clear that Luke just sees her as not worth his time and kind of beneath his notice on some level. The thing I noticed, like, that Shirley Jackson does that's really neat is that, like, when Luke is talking, often she'll... It seems like she'll do the first couple of things of what he's saying, and then, like, Eleanor will start thinking about something else, and then we won't see what the dialogue of what Luke was saying. Like, it's like it's so boring that Shirley Jackson won't even put the dialogue on paper.
Yeah, Eleanor is not interested in him at all. She's interested in the idea of having, like, a partner and a life and a house. And throughout the whole book, she is a compulsive liar. She lives in this fairy tale world, and Jackson does this really neat thing where she writes, whenever they do that, those, like, the dialogue where they're riffing off of each other and saying, like, stories and making up things, right?
Yeah.
We know the true situation of all the other characters when they make up their lies, right?
Yeah.
But with Eleanor, she hasn't told any other characters anything else. So all they know of her are these lies, whereas the other characters at some point do mention realities about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
That when they're starting, like, oh, I am a bullfighter, whatever it is they say, we know that they're very clearly just making fun of each other and jesting, and we know the background. Yeah. But not with Eleanor. With Eleanor, it's always lies. Which is really interesting. I really like her as a character. She's so unreliable.
Yes. Yeah, she's definitely, she lies a lot. She tells a story about, like, how she has, like, the two statues and a white cat or something that's just completely made
up. The two lion
up.
Statues, the cup of stars. Yeah.
Yeah, the cup of stars, the white, she says at one point that she has a white cat, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
White curtains. She has her own apartment, which is not true at all. Mm-hmm. I don't know, she lives with her sister.
Horrible sister. Just ridiculously horrible sister who controls her finances.
Yeah. Yeah, there's the other thing that, like, she's maybe at the beginning being kind of, like, financially abused by her sister, mm-hmm. and it's her brother-in-law, I believe. And like, she wants to borrow the car, and they won't let her. And she's like, but I paid for half of it. And they won't even let her use the car that she paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Like... So she is.
She has to steal the car, which she's not stealing, but she's afraid of them finding out.
Okay, I want to ask something because as someone who's, like, studied this book rather than me who just read it, there's that scene at the beginning where Eleanor's going to take the car, and she bumps into a woman and, like, knocks over all her stuff. What was the significance of that? Because I feel like there was something important there that I didn't get.
You know, I read this book like 3 times.
Yeah.
I still can't fully figure it out.
Okay.
I've tried. I've looked up some answers. I don't have anything concrete. The best answer I have come up with is she has cursed Eleanor. Also, it feels like the taxi driver was in on it. And I feel like she got conned.
Yeah.
And
so maybe the idea is that she's very naive.
She's super naive.
That's just,
she's extremely okay. Naive, but also extremely manipulative, too.
Yeah.
It's a really cool balance. I don't think there's a lot of manipulative but truly naive characters out there.
I read that old woman scene as sincere, but I guess you're saying it was actually a scam, which is, you know, that is a very common scam where, like, I don't know, it happens in New York where you're like, you bump into someone like, oh, you broke my glasses. They were $200.
And yeah.
They like get in your face and are like, you owe me $200. So you think the woman was kind of doing that kind of scheme?
I think so, because the taxi driver kind of waited for her and then they sped off.
Okay.
But I still can't figure out why it's there.
Yeah.
I've tried.
It's one of those things where it's kind of like a Chekhov's gun where I'm just like, there was some significance to this and I just don't understand what it was quite yet.
Maybe the woman was the little companion. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, you said you didn't like some parts of this book.
Again, it's not that I didn't like it. It's just that I found parts of it kind of hard to read. There's a lot of talking. It's very play-like in that, like,
yes,
something will happen and then the characters will spend a lot of time. There's going to be a lot of dialogue devoted to, like, reacting to it and discussing what it means. And It's not bad, but it was hard for me to read. I was trying to read it before bed, and I kept falling asleep while reading it, which is, again, not necessarily a bad thing, because, you know, one of my favorite books is The Great Gatsby, and I always fell asleep reading that when I first read it in high school. It wasn't the easiest read. It's not, I don't know, but I'm trying to decide whether I liked it or not. Like, I liked a lot about it. Like, I like the characters. They're interesting. I felt like the ending was very abrupt. Like, I felt like, I don't know, it felt like it was building to something, and I felt like the ending was a bit of a letdown in that sense. That's just like,
that's fair.
It's just like, okay, she's becoming too possessed, so she's gonna leave, and she drives into a tree and dies. Like, it felt almost curtailed. Like, it felt like there should have been more. But I understand that, like, maybe that's the point, is that, like, this is very sudden and abrupt. But, like, but then maybe I've been conditioned. So I was thinking about this today. Like, maybe I've been conditioned by horror films and modern horror that there needs to be some kind of epic confrontation or reckoning or, you know, final moment that culminates in some revelation, and that doesn't really happen here, and maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, that's fair. So I really, really think that the story is mostly kind of an analysis of a psyche of a person who feels trapped.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense for Shirley Jackson. I don't know if you knew this, but she had agoraphobia. And it worsened over the years.
That does not surprise me based on the works by her that I've read. Yeah.
For those who don't know, it's a fear of open spaces and being out in public.
Yeah.
And near the end of her life, she was extremely agoraphobic. So I think a lot of the story kind of takes us into the mindset of a person who was basically raised kind of in a prison, and at the first chance of freedom, was no longer able to cope with it. That's the read I kind of got on it. It seems that Eleanor has been taking care of her mother since childhood. Right. It doesn't seem like her sister was involved in that at all. And she has no friends. She has had no partners. She's never lived alone, right? She's literally only ever worked for her mother, pretty much. Like, this is her first chance to actually go out there. And when she does, her mood is insane. Like, one second she's extremely calm and in the moment and present, and the next she is hating every single person in a room with her. And then the next, she's extremely lonely and really wants their company. And the next, she's jealous of them because even though they're all hanging out together, she feels like she's being left out mid-conversation as she is having like a full-on dialogue with everyone else equally. And it's a lot of those sort of things.
Definitely. I don't know. I just feel like you understand this novel on like a much deeper level than I do, having studied it. So
that's
I don't
fair.
Know if I have anything
I really
to
like
add.
It.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I will add this. I want to present like this is Chloe's theory of horror.
Okay. I am excited.
Okay. So like in my mind, like I was trying to think about different horror like genres or subgenres. And like to me, this is falls into like what I would call domestic or social horror, where the mm-hmm. horror is really built up by the fact that someone's interactions with others and how they are isolated or apart from them. Like Eleanor, as you were saying, kind of is going through a lot and she's separate from everyone else. And that kind of creates this tension and indeed some horror that emerges. I mean, there's also the ghost stuff that's happening, but I think the real horror is like Eleanor and her relationships with the others and like how she feels, as you were saying, you know, based on Shirley Jackson's agoraphobia, mm-hmm. how she feels apart from everyone, how she feels separate, and that feeling of isolation and loneliness, and that pain is its own kind of horror. And to me, like, that form of horror can sometimes be the scariest because we as humans are very social animals. Like even the most introverted of us, I think at some point needs to have some social interaction or else, mm-hmm. you know, that's not good for our sanity. And I think that's, I don't know. I was like thinking about, I'm kind of losing it, but like that kind of horror, I think is the most important. I mean, there's other types of horror, you know, there's scary monsters and Lovecraftian, but like to me, I don't know, the way I like to think about this book, the type of horror this is, I was thinking about it, it's like the type of horror, like imagine the feeling when you're in a room and everyone is laughing at a joke that you don't get.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what this book is.
Yes, that's what Eleanor is feeling. And just imagine, you know, like their laughter, it's just like that awful, like almost that manic sort of laughter that people get when it's something of tears in their eyes, grabbing their bellies, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of laughter. And Eleanor's just standing there straight faced. And I think a lot of it, you know, like I've been in a situation, you know, where like there's you say something and everyone laughs at you and you don't understand why. And that feeling is horrifying on some level. Like it creates a ton of anxiety. You don't know how to deal with it. You're like, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
Am I being an idiot? What did I do? and that's the kind of horror here. If that makes sense.
It absolutely does. But I feel like there's also an additional layer to it. It's not that she said something and everyone is laughing at her. It feels more like she has said a really good joke that she doesn't think is a good joke. And everyone is laughing, and she thinks they're laughing at her.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I feel like that's a more accurate... That's a really good allegory. You should have helped me with my presentation with Patrick. It would have been great.
Well, maybe if we time travel. We're traveling back in time so that I can help you with your essay and your presentation or whatever. And then you can help me by convincing me to quit my job earlier at Chest. Anyway.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Okay. Deal.
So
I want to talk about their relationship.
Yes.
It's
we haven't
so
talked
cute.
About that. Yeah.
It's really adorable.
It's hurts that they don't end up together. Like it feels like, I don't know, it's frustrating, but you understand, like, again, mm-hmm. it's a product of the time in some levels too, but like,
but not only that, like Theodora is a taken woman.
Yeah,
she is. She does have two hands. I will always make that argument no matter what.
Yeah.
She does have two hands.
But she's clearly...
she has been using both of them.
And she's clearly into Eleanor on some level. Yes. Like, they clearly both... this feeling is mutual. It's not just Eleanor, like, imagining it. Or at least, I mean, unreliable narrative, but we don't think it's that way. Theodora seems to be interested in Eleanor on some level. But I think Theodora is also a bit of a tease. It's kind of implied, like, mm-hmm. she's also kind of playing with Eleanor.
She's a hot girl.
Yeah. this was their Hill House hot girl summer.
Yes.
but she's totally, you know, being flirty and kind of, you know, and then she kind of spurns Eleanor at the end as well. But like, yeah, I don't know. They work so well together. Like, it makes sense. It's such a good pairing. You know, everyone loves the, like, shy introvert with the cool extroverted artist is such a good, like, such a good lesbian pairing, right?
And, yeah, except the shy introvert is actually in charge.
Yeah.
Which is an even better pairing, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. The Harrow and Gideon.
Man, when Eleanor was saying goodbye to everyone and she left Theodora for last.
Yeah.
That was such a good scene.
Yeah.
Because Theodora was so, so upset because she thought that Eleanor was going to ignore her. And then when she didn't, she like sprinted to that woman.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's really something about like Theodora's very, very manic energy, but calm personality. And Eleanor's very, very calm personality and manic energy. I think it really meshes together.
It's a real opposites attract sort of situation.
Mm-hmm. And she keeps saying that line. The journey's end and lovers meeting.
Yeah.
Which I think in the end turned out to be her and the house.
Yeah.
More than her and any other person, which is extremely sad.
Yeah.
But overall, for most of the book, it was Theodora. And I don't know, like, my favorite parts were when they were jealous and protective of each other.
Yeah.
It happens over and over again, throughout the entire novel. That's lesbian behavior, guys.
this is true. And especially when Theodora gets jealous because Eleanor and Luke had been talking. Their conversation was so innocent. Like, you can see like where Luke was being a little flirty, but Eleanor didn't really seem to be flirting backwards. I mean, a little bit, but Theodora is just like very upset. She's so protective of Eleanor, and it's really it's really funny. It's such a funny scene when you read it like that. I wonder what, like, a person, because you said, like, all the straight people in your class, like, didn't really pick up on that. Like, what would they read that scene as, though? Like, what could that possibly be but, like, you know, romantic? Right?
Literally, it's my favorite three pages. It's, like, two pages.
Yeah, it's short, but...
It's very short. So it starts with kind of Theodora almost, she's very mean to Eleanor in that scene because she's like, if you like him so much, why don't you go and marry him? It's almost pretty much that exact thing. And then Eleanor's like, maybe I will. And Theodora's like, well, good. Maybe you should. I don't care what you do. And Eleanor's like, well, I'm glad you don't care what I do. And Theodora's like, well, I'm glad you're glad I don't care what you do. It's literally that childish kind of like back and forth.
Yeah, it's like they're flirting even when they're arguing.
And, oh man. And then when Theodora sees that it's actually making Eleanor upset, she deflates and gets very protective. And she's like, hey, he's a playboy. He's playing with you. He's taking advantage. He should not be allowed to do that. And when I was reading that, it's like, oh my god, they were like talking to each other, but they wanted both to get out of that conversation. Eleanor and Luke cannot stand each other.
Right.
You know when you go to a place with friends and they know a lot of people, but you only know them, and then they walk away?
And
so you kind of just like have to make conversation with whoever you were talking to at the time, and it's like, how do you get out of this? And
you try different things to like kind of get out of it, and it's not working.
Yeah, or you try and keep the... Both of you are aware of that, and there's like silences and pauses. That's what their conversations feel like, Eleanor and Luke.
Yeah. And it's even worse when like you have to sit there and like try to keep the conversation going because you can't really get out of it for whatever reason. Like you have to stay there. Maybe you're like you're at dinner and the person went to the bathroom. And so it's like, OK, we're sitting at the table together. I can't just like I can't just like take my drink and go somewhere else. But like,
yeah,
that's the energy. It's so awkward.
It's so awkward.
Yeah. And then when you said Dr. Montague is like kind of like a father figure, that's definitely his energy. Like he's so aloof throughout the novel. Like
he's someone that your brother would play as a D&D character.
Wow. Yes. I mean, he definitely has that energy of like, I don't know. Yeah. We're just saying like energy a lot tonight. I don't know. It's just like everything
vibing,
has energy.
We're all about energy. It's springtime. We're empaths like Theodora.
It's springtime. Energy is in the air. Yes, he is my brother's D&D character, that's for sure.
I still can't get over Theodora's conversation with Eleanor after that.
Yeah.
Because it's so good. And then when... I'm just going to summarize it because I love it.
Okay.
I've highlighted it in 10 different assignments.
Please do.
And then Theodora's like, oh, okay, this is actually making Eleanor upset, so I'm going to actually say what I want her to understand, that Luke is not a great guy for her. And then Eleanor realizes that Theodora legitimately thinks that Eleanor is interested in Luke, which is not the case. So she also tries to protect Theodora and clear up the situation, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, this is the part I've mentioned in the beginning. But at this point, they ran out of the house yelling at each other, right? Yeah. They're kind of storming away from it, not looking at each other, but still being very, very close, walking in tandem, not separating. They kind of always gravitate towards each other. If you notice in every scene that they're together, if they're in the, what was that room they're always in? The parlor?
The library, something.
Where they drink their brandy. Alcohols,
yes.
Their brandies. They're always by the fireplace.
Yeah.
And almost always touching.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always like the two male characters are off playing chess or whatever, and then Eleanor and Theodore are like, I think they're often sitting on the floor or lying on the floor and just like touching each other.
Yes. And that's why they give me such stoner vibes.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very lethargic and kind of like loosey-goosey.
I guess it's that it's like a Victorian ennui that they're kind of affecting in those scenes.
Yeah. And okay, I will read this line.
Okay.
So this is right after they argue and they storm off, and now they're walking together as a couple into a dark forest of a haunted mansion. And it says, nothing irrevocable has yet been spoken, but there was only the barest margin of safety left them, each of them moving delicately along the outskirts of an open question, and once spoken, such a question as, do you love me, could never be answered or forgotten.
Yeah,
come
that
on.
Lie, that lie. Yeah,
come
that,
on.
That's just nail in the coffin of anyone who thinks this is straight. Come on.
Literally, do you love me? And I will accept the argument that it could be siblings, but I will not accept the argument that it can't be anything other than siblings, which I've heard before, and it was wild to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't behave like that with my sister or my cousins or any of my family members.
Yeah, and even people that I'm like platonically friends with, I don't like
go
out into the, you know, into the night with them and think, could this be love? Like, that's not something you think about a friend. It's like, yeah, you're my friend and I love you. You know, it's like not like the question of love in our relationship. That's something very uniquely romantic about that.
Yes. Do you remember when Eleanor walked up the tower, the staircase in the library, and they all ran in to rescue her?
Yeah.
Do you remember how worried Theodora was?
Yeah, she is really panicking.
Like, everyone is panicking.
But, yeah.
And
but she's,
Luke.
Yeah.
Luke is also really, really panicky, which made me love him even more because, like, this is a person he does not like. This is, like, that awkward girl that he's trying to avoid the whole time he's there.
Yeah.
And now she does some stupid thing, like climb the rusted through falling apart staircase that everyone told everyone to stay away from. So he's annoyed and angry, but at the same time, the whole book, he was describing himself as a coward, right? Yeah. But when it came to actually getting the thing done, he did go up there and he did save her and he did let her go down first, putting himself in tremendous amounts of danger.
Yeah.
I love that boy.
Luke overall is a good man.
He's a very good guy.
Dr. Montague, like, not so much, I feel like.
Yeah, he's a little not in touch with reality.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not bad. He's just kind of the stereotype of an academic who's just kind of oblivious.
He's very oblivious.
And his wife is awful. And her wife's companion,
oh God,
Arthur, who we haven't really mentioned too much, who arrives with the wife, who's basically like Filch from Harry Potter. We're connecting everything to Harry Potter. But like, just like this very like, I don't know, he's just like stick up his butt type guy.
He's like is he a headmaster at a school?
Yeah,
or
at
like
a
caretaker
school.
At a boys' school, and he's a very macho man type of guy.
And he's implied super... to not be very smart, despite the fact that he's headmaster of a school.
He's like, I only eat meat and potatoes. You don't eat anything more.
Yeah.
And I don't care if our students take classes, because what's important is learning sports.
Yeah.
He's like very jarhead.
And then he just like walks up and down the hallways with a gun
Shotguns.
All night. Yeah. He's just, he's awful.
Which I really love that scene where the four main characters get together in the same room right before that happens, because they're like, oh, we have to stay together. Because if we go out at any moment in the middle of the night, he will shoot us.
Yeah.
It really made me like them more as a group.
Yeah.
They're a really great group.
They are.
I feel like they would throw the best parties.
Yeah. Man, I want to see them in a van together driving around solving mysteries.
Yes. Oh my God. It would be the worst. They would get no mysteries solved.
Yeah.
But there will be a lot of drama.
Scooby don't. That was really bad. That was so bad. Oh,
oh
my God.
God. Oh, but yeah, kind of like getting back to that scene where she's coming down the tower after she's had either a mental breakdown or was possessed by the house. One or the other, I would say.
Yeah, or both.
There's always, yes, I love that answer. It's one of my favorite answers, right? Two hands or both. But Theodora is so extremely worried. I think out of all of the characters, she says the least in that scene. And if I'm remembering correctly, a lot of those things that she says are her calling out whenever Eleanor either slips a little or something breaks. But just, she's unable to even communicate in that moment because of how terrified she is for Eleanor and Luke. Mostly Eleanor, let's be real.
Yeah. It's a nice scene. It's kind of the penultimate scene, basically.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good, I guess, okay, you have kind of convinced me that maybe the ending is better than I thought.
Oh, I'm glad.
I am convinced.
Awesome.
I feel like I need to give this book another read. Like, you have convinced me that I need to give this book another read as well. So
have you seen the show?
No, because there was the part with the kittens.
Yeah. Okay, so the show is very unfaithful.
Yeah.
As an adaptation.
It's set in like the modern day, right?
That I don't care about.
Okay.
What I do care about is in the show, they made Luke, Theodora, and Eleanor siblings.
Weird.
Luke and Eleanor are twins.
Okay.
And Theo is their older sister who is a lesbian.
Okay.
But it's very, very different.
Yeah.
I struggled through it. I think I struggled through like the first 5 episodes.
Yeah.
And then the last 3 I really enjoyed because I just kind of like let go of the idea that this is an adaptation and just went with it.
Yeah.
And as a TV show, it is kind of good. I really liked it in hindsight after the fact. But in terms of this book, I think actually the second series, Haunting of Bly Manor, is a more faithful adaptation of this book than it is.
Oh, that's interesting. Than Hill House is. It kind of is. Because I watched Bly Manor. That I really enjoyed. We should do an episode on it at some point.
We should. Which Bly Manor is, of course, Turn of the Screw, mainly.
Oh, I've never read Turn of the Screw.
I have thoughts on that story, too. Okay. It's not queer. I wouldn't say it's really good. I just had a lot of fun analyzing it. Okay. It has a very... I understand why they combined the two stories.
Yeah.
It has a very serious... has a very similar problem that we're supposed to figure out as readers as... what is actually haunted? Is it this very obvious thing that everyone is saying is haunted? Or this other aspect of the story that just feels really weird and strange?
Yeah.
In this case, it's Eleanor and her whole vibe. I'm not going to say what it is in Turn of the Screw in case people want to read it, which I recommend.
Okay, I'll have to read that and then we can do an episode on Bly Manor where we talk about Turn of the Screw as well.
I'll have to reread it as well because it has been a while. But yeah, I really like this book. I was very surprised. I'm very glad that my classmate made me do... Well, he didn't make me. He just like nudge, nudge, hint, hint, wink, limp wrist, let's do this.
Shout out to Patrick.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's a good note to end on. I came into this conversation pretty neutral on this book, and you have convinced me to give it another go and definitely shown me that there's a lot more depth here that I wasn't aware of. So thank you for that.
That is literally the best thing you could have said to me.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to be living off of that compliment for like a while.
I'm glad I could make your night, Val. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We have some social medias to plug. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest are @InMediaLez. We have a subreddit, r/InMediaLez. Our website is InMediaLez.com. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com. If you email us a question or comment, we would love to read it on the air sometime. Please remember to like, subscribe, rate, smash that like button, whatever the YouTubers say. Thank you so much for
ring that bell.
Ring that bell.
And talk to me about this book on our social media.
Yeah.
I will reply enthusiastically.
Tell us what the lady at the beginning means.
Yeah. Who is she?
If you write us a message telling us what the lady at the beginning means, we will definitely feature that. thank you so much again, and have a good one.
We'll see you in the next one.